to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Hey, it's Scott Lips, and welcome back, my friends, to Spin Magazine's Lip Service. I'm excited for my next guests. They both grew up in the spotlight in a family of entertainers. Bella Thorne is a former Disney star, now Hollywood superstar. She's an actor, director, author with her own jewelry line, her own Wii company. She's a pop culture figure to the tune of over 25 million followers. She wrote a book, The Life of Wannabe Mogul. Her sister, Dani Thorne, also known as Comet, is a DJ, producer, model. They have their own podcast on AMP called Twisted Sisters. So much going on. We're going to get into it and chop it up. Coming up in just a moment, the Thorne Sisters.
You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Today's episode of the show is brought to you by the all-new DLZ Creator from Mackie. The DLZ Creator is an adaptive digital mixer designed for podcasting and streaming, and it's what I'm using right now to make this podcast. What makes it so special? DLZ's mix agent technology takes all the hard parts out of making your podcast. With three selectable user modes from easy to enhanced to professional, DLZ allows creators of any experience level to make content on their own terms. It is easy. It is amazing. If you are a podcast user, you need this thing right away in Podcast Creator. With features like Setup Assistant, Auto Mix, Mackie has taken 30 years of audio legacy and packed all their expertise into a podcasting mixer that is not only top of the line, but incredibly easy to use. I can attest to that. I'm using it right now. I love it. You can find out more about DLZ Creator at Mackie.com. Check it out, the DLZ Creator by Mackie.
You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Welcome to the show, Bella and Dani Thorne. Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going good. Mm-hmm. The weather's finally better.
It is.
It's fucking hot. It's the wrong day to wear a black turtleneck, I'll tell you that.
I love your AMP show, by the way, because you kind of finish each other's sentences. And I was listening to what I was just telling you a minute ago, where you were talking about dating and the dating apps. And I know you're sisters, but you almost feel like twins because I never, you know, you literally would finish each other's sentences on the show.
Yeah.
It's a great show. You're having fun with it?
We're having so much fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, we got to keep reminding ourselves to say each other's names because our voices are so similar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That it like confuses people who's talking.
Like, oh, by the way, that's me. I'm dating.
Do you have a favorite show so far? I personally like the dating app one because I thought it was very interesting how you were exploring dating apps and the concept behind it. And something that people talk about a lot, but like it's such a common thing these days.
Yeah.
By the way, 10 years ago, no one would ever talk about that. Nobody would ever tell each other that they met on a dating app. It was almost like taboo. Now, if you're not on one, it's almost like weird, right? But the show is great. You're having fun with it. This show, we're going to talk about your life, your history, and get into all your many projects because you have amazing projects going on. So many that we'll speak about. But talk to me a little bit about growing up together in Florida, what it was like, your family, music, life growing up together.
Well, music was always really incorporated in our lives.
Yeah.
Our mom and dad would always blast that music really loud.
Very eclectic taste. They never sheltered us because it was explicit or something. It was just good music all the time, of all the different genres, different times. So, definitely grew up with that. And being Cuban, too. Lots of dancing.
Did you ever get to tap into that Cuban side, the Cuban heritage? Did you tap into that? Did you go? Ever been to Cuba? I've never been there.
No, we've wanted to go.
Yeah. We're waiting to do like a whole family trip and everybody's schedules meet up so that we can all go together and experience that, you know, with our mom and stuff. But yeah, definitely we try to keep the Cuban heritage alive, even though Papi's not here anymore. Yeah.
Do you speak Spanish, both of you?
No, not anymore.
Okay.
Try.
I actually know that you dedicated your set the other day at Ultra, like Guns, I think you played Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
And then you dedicated that to your dad. So was there an 80s side of you that you were really into, your parents were into growing up? Talk to me.
Because
you know, I'm a rock guy, so we can talk about this all day long. But
We listened to so much of that growing up. And it wasn't just like, oh, we're listening to it in the car. No, it's like our parents are like singing every word, really. Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah. Some of our fondest memories are actually singing music together. Especially of that era.
When Dani did her set and he said it was for Daddy. It was so good.
Yeah, so it was Ultra Miami, which for me was a huge goals list check to actually get to play a stage there, the worldwide stage. Because we're from Miami. And so I always said, like, one day when I got the chance that I would dedicate that set to my dad. And And so I got to do that.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
I was like trying not to cry. I was like, oh my God, I'm doing it with a bang.
But yeah, musically, what were you exposed to growing up? Like, what did, specifically did your parents listen to? Like, obviously, I don't think it was EDM, right? So.
Oh, no. No, definitely not. No EDM in our house.
So what were they listening to that kind of, because I think that you kind of like, I feel like you love hip hop, right? Am I correct? Mm-hmm. And you obviously, the EDM thing, was there a rock part of you that sort of?
We both love rock. Yeah. Okay.
I love rock.
Classic
sure.
rock. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, I think everything. I was definitely a big 80s person. I got my mom's like iPod, and so it had all her music on it, and those are like the songs that I kind of became obsessed with. I'll definitely say there's some like Led Zeppelin and Billy Squire.
Billy Squire is great.
I love Billy Squire. Yeah.
Pat Benatar, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Heart.
Yeah.
Austin.
I love Heart.
Mm-hmm.
And did they ever listen? Was it specifically rock that they listened to, or just all kinds of 80s pop and
stuff? All sorts of 80s, okay. Yeah. It depends who you're asking. My mom definitely loved more of the 80s pop, and my dad loved more of the classic rock. But they both enjoyed hip-hop of the modern time, which was like Eminem, Dr. Dre.
Run DMC.
Yeah. Two Live Crew. Shouldn't have been blasting that around children, but we did, and we loved it, and I sang along to it, and it was a great time. My parents were cool.
Well, funny enough, you wanted to be an astronaut, so we'll talk, because your stage name is Comet.
That's true.
I feel like it all kind of feeds into one at this point for you, right? Did you see yourself as, that's really what you want to do when you were younger, right? Or a scientist, maybe?
Yeah, no, yeah. 100%. Another thing really dedicated to my dad, he was super into sci-fi, and I was kind of a daddy's girl. I loved everything he loved. So watching Star Trek or Battlestar Galactica or any of the, you know, Mars Attacks, etc., I don't know why I really was so drawn to it at a young age, and I thought it would be cool one day, like when I was really young, to be an astronaut. I was so fascinated with space. And then we watched a movie one time, and I'm forgetting which one it is. It's a classic, but they literally are coming back to Earth, or they're leaving, and they explode. And I was just like, oh, does that really happen? He was like, all the time. And I was like,
I mean, it did. Yeah,
I'm not going that.
I think it was Cape Canaveral years ago that happened. It's not, that was, it was a very dangerous occupation.
Yeah.
On paper, it sounds great, astronaut.
Yep, as a kid,
and then you're like, wait a minute, I didn't know that could blow up on me.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating because early on, I feel like, I think your parents were like, just do some modeling and acting because that's kind of a way to pay the bills. And I think you were even in like a pot. I think, Bella, you might have been in a Pottery Barn commercial like super early on, right? You were in
a print. Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
At like 6 months old or something, right?
Yeah, 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah, as my mom tells the story, I had the job when I was in the womb. they didn't care that I was a boy or a girl. Like, they just, it didn't matter to them. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, and they're like, we just put, you know, a color on it, and you just can't tell when they're that young.
It's funny because I'm deep in that business. I don't know historically if there was a lot of money in kids modeling, but maybe that was just a way to pay the bills early on, right? Feels like.
I don't think that there's a ton of money in child modeling. No, I think that kind of when you grow up in Miami, that's like something that is that a lot of kids do, like everywhere.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some of them like then go to acting kind of thing. Yeah, I think though at that time, you know, I think that money and things were, you know, fine. It was, you know, more so when my mom got sick and then, that things were hard for the rest of the time. So I don't think that modeling was ever supposed to be like something.
Way to pay the bills.
Yeah, that paid the bills.
Yeah.
Or even what it would turn into.
But it's really nice when parents are very supportive of the creative process.
I agree.
You have parents. My parents, when I was 17, I said, I'm going to move to LA. That's where I had that hair, and I'm going to be a drummer. And they're like, what? What's going on? But they let me do it. So early on, it seems like your parents were super supportive of this.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm sure your mom is super proud of you now, too. But were they kind of pushing you? I feel, you know, did you want to? You were so young, so obviously it wasn't your decision to do modeling. But acting, do you feel it was something you wanted to do, or was something you just felt like you had to do early on, both of you?
Yeah, I think it was super cool always from the get-go. Since you start so young, you don't really remember a time without it. And it's just like, I don't know, it's mainly our childhood. I feel like I connected more with people on sets than I did like in school or something. But yeah, it was something that was always, I felt like a choice. I loved it. I loved getting in front of the camera. I loved letting all out all that ADD energy. I loved posing. I loved fashion.
you know. And then when we had the chance to move to LA, it was like, hell yeah, that seems so exciting.
Because before then, you used to come to New York to do modeling. Right. So on the week, well, I don't know if it's the weekends or the week.
Summering.
Summer, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you do like 3 jobs a day there? Or what?
Oh, yeah. Then you know. Yeah. It is crazy. Yeah. I mean, also just I think child industry was so different back then. Yeah. There was a lot less laws. I don't know if you'd be allowed to do that these days, but it was so fun running job to job.
Yeah, what memories do you have of those early days of acting and obviously modeling like back in the day? I mean, you were so young, both of you, but do you have like specific memories about those years for yourself?
Yeah. I felt super cool because the only person I've ever truly fangirled over was Hilary Duff. Growing up, I was obsessed with Lizzie McGuire. And so I booked this Barbie campaign and ends up leading to a national commercial, but you didn't know that was kind of like the test. And so we get the national commercial, me and my sister Kylie, and we go out to Pennsylvania from New York, and we see all these pictures like inside the production room of Hilary Duff, and we're like, why are all these pictures of Hilary Duff in here? And he goes, haha, it's a surprise, but she's like the lead of the commercial. And all of us are just like, ah! It was so cool. It was literally as like a child just being like, how the fuck is this happening right now? I got to have a conversation with her. And then by the time I went back to start sixth grade, the commercial was already airing. And it was quite annoyingly airing because it was this theme song that everybody used to sing at school, but in like a poking fun kind of way. And I was just like, fuck you. I'm a Barbie girl. It's cute. Yeah.
You were both homeschooled, right, at that point?
Later on. So when I think sixth grade was my last year before homeschooling. Then we all got homeschooled.
I started third grade.
You know, it's different when you're homeschooled, obviously, interacting with the kids at a young age. Do you ever feel like you missed... wish I had that thing where I was in school with kids and we could interact, or you never really felt, you didn't know what you were missing because you were so young?
Yeah, I think you don't know what you're missing. I was bullied anyway in school, is one of the reasons why I was taken out. So It wasn't that I already had such a great time. Yeah. I was speaking Spanish. I didn't know how to read. I was always modeling, so I wasn't really in school much. And all those things, like the pretty dumb model girl, like that just got to such... a point that then my teachers as well were like, oh, you should take her to Sylvan Learning Center and see if there's issues, because this isn't necessarily like normal that she really can't like read now by this age. And then they diagnosed me and they were like, oh yeah, you should pull her out of school because this will just like get worse for her. She needs like, you know, one-on-one attention, and she needs to drop a language because she's not going to learn in one language, let alone two. And then as I got older, yes, I definitely think now that I would like to go back to school. You know, I've been thinking about picking up some film classes. I love filming, directing, writing, picking up a cinematography class, some other things, editing classes. And it'll also like be fun for me to get a little bit of that experience that I never really like had. And I'm totally okay with not having it. I feel like the bullying would have just got worse. So I'm like, I'm okay.
It's fascinating, because I was reading an article the other day about some of the biggest directors in the world, like Quentin Tarantino, that never went to film school.
Yeah.
But it is fascinating, right? I guess it's great to have that knowledge, but ultimately it's about life experience, right?
100%. I think that one thing that most people get at when they're talking about whether it's good or not to go to film school, and they say, well, look at all these amazing people that didn't. I think mainly what they're saying is, if you're trying to learn how to direct a movie or make a movie, then don't go to film school. Like, it's not that you have to just go to film school and that's the way you're going to do it, because look at all these amazing people that have done it without it. I think more so they're saying, like I wouldn't be going to film school to learn how to make a movie. I'm going for it to learn specific things, so I know exactly what I'm referencing when I'm on set. So I know exactly, there is no debate whether it's this or that. The worst thing you want to be in a room with a cinematographer and have not an idea when it comes to ratio versus lenses and light fixtures. You're just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Your like head starts to spin. I'm like working on film as well. I'm starting on film. So that will be its whole other like beast to handle. Editing.
So not digital.
Yeah.
Like old school film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not that I will always do film, but I am picking it up now. I'm doing it for my next short, and learning it, you know, really getting to use it and getting to understand it. Beautiful. beautiful, but you know, also like editing, that's one of the most important things.
Definitely.
And I spend 16 hours with my editor, with them just doing it all day long, that I don't leave their side. So there's no reason as well that I shouldn't know exactly how to do it physically myself.
Yeah.
With my own fingers.
I love that you do so many things, because you both have accomplished so much, which is incredible. Talk to me a little bit about when you moved to LA, what it was like. I think you're 13 or 14, Danny, and
mm-hmm.
maybe Bella, you're 8 or 9. And when you first got into acting, and I think Entourage was one of the first things you did in Big Love. And
mm-hmm.
so talk to me about that time period for you.
Yeah, I remember going on Entourage. That was so fun. That was so fun, because we were such huge fans of the show. Mommy loved the show. Daddy loved the show. And, you know, not that our parents ever were necessarily pushed us to do any of these things. No, we wanted to do acting. Like, that was always, you know, our idea. But there was this certain level, I think, especially for our father, where he wanted to create this Thorne empire, and, you know, always he loved movies. I think he loved movies more so than even my mom.
Mm.
Like how Danny said, so big in the sci-fi and everything like that. So when I got Entourage, that was so exciting. And even though I have like 3 lines, it was just of the can't believe I get to go meet Turtle and all these
so
people.
Huge. She like opens the door and she's so tiny. Yeah.
I remember yeah. kind of life reflecting, you know, television, whatever. Years ago, I had a meeting with Ari Emanuel, and like the real Ari,
mm-hmm.
and he was like yelling at someone in the office before I was supposed to get in there, like the TV show. And I'm like, I'm not going in there after that. Because he was like, you'll never work. And I was like, can I wait an hour before I go there? But it was, yeah, it was interesting. But do you think that show could exist today? I feel like
yes.
it's, yeah, in a yes. different 100%. Format maybe, right?
100%.
Really? Okay.
I think, though, that people need to be a little less scared to do some things.
Yeah.
You know, there is this level of not getting canceled and not offended. But, you know, there's a level of also comedy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of comedians talk about this all the time, where you might as well just, like, kill it off the face of the earth then. You know, if you're not going to, at some point, somewhere, in someone's time, you're going to offend them by making a joke, whatever it is about. And I think that there's definitely a lot of wrongs that go down in comedy that you're
yeah.
like, oof. But for the most part, I think the statement is totally truthful, which is really like, how are we supposed to make things anymore that get people to think without maybe possibly offending some people?
Yeah.
And if we don't ever try, then how do we know really what actually is offensive or not?
Yeah.
And I think that people, in order to make Entourage now, you'd have to be a little less scared, because the fun part about Entourage, I think, as well, is you've got these like rebellious, you know, kids growing up and getting into Hollywood and all these cliches that you think that you know about Hollywood stuff.
Sexism and all.
Yeah, and it kind of, you're kind of like, well, yeah, you can't cut it out though. It's
yeah.
kind of, it has to be in there in order for it to work. One, and also it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, it's true. So why are we all trying to, I do hope that something is given a chance to shine, whether it be scary or not, or risk-taking or not. I really hope, because I know that there's scripts out there that want to do it and want to take the chance. We just need networks to also do that.
Yeah. You do like the darker side of things in terms of film and TV, right? That's sort of what you take to a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw The Grudge in theaters when it came out.
And that,
so just
and that
do the math
it.
On that.
Right.
I don't know what the math is, but I was young.
you were mentioning your dad, by the way. He had such an incredible work ethic. And I feel like, did you get your work ethic from there? I would imagine so, right? Sort of that drive and that ambition.
Yeah, I think we got a lot of things from
oh.
Daddy, yeah, and from Mommy as well.
Yeah.
They're both like engine drivers, you know. They
yeah.
both came from nothing and made something of themselves and came together to make this family. And they're both from really, really shitty backgrounds that most people don't make it out of alive.
Yeah.
So I think we definitely learned that as well, which has given us like real humility in life, of really just understanding just how hard it is to, one, get by and two, like be something more than everybody told you you couldn't be, or
yeah.
your parents or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, how they grew up. And they definitely have shown us that, yeah. that it is fucking 100% possible.
Yeah. It's interesting because people would always, from what I understand, people would tell you you can't do something, but it just made you work harder and push down the door harder. Because that's definitely. Typical in Hollywood, right? People don't usually open up the door easily. No. You have to, no one really helps you, right? Mm-hmm. So like, no. But usually sometimes when you're really driven, that no is like, all right, I'm going to work harder because I want to succeed. Absolutely. So did you find that really, in a way, like, because people always, you know, like I said, it's not usually like the door is just open, but it gave you that work ethic and that ambition to really succeed as you did.
I definitely would never be here or have the type of drive that I have if our parents didn't instill that in us, you know. And there's a lot of great things. There's also, like, you know, moments taken away from your time and your childhood, but you're thankful now because you're just like, God damn, if I had to learn how to work this hard right now, I'd never make it. This is so fucking hard. If this wasn't already instilled in me, and I think about that too, and a lot when I think about having kids, of just like, well, life's gotta be hard though. Life's gotta be hard though, because you're not really a good person when life's not hard, man. Like, I want my kid to like really work hard and want to be something and achieve something and make a difference somewhere, and not just be like, oh yeah, like, I had an easy life, man. I can smoke weed on my couch and chill. Not that smoking weed is bad. Yeah. I love smoking weed, but you know.
I feel like I'd be scared to bring kids into the world right now with everything going. I mean, you read, you do that doom scrolling thing, and I'm just like, I'm not bringing anyone.
I just don't even do that anymore.
Yeah. No. Well, talk to me about Belly. You're like 12 years old. You get this call, obviously, to audition for Shake It Up, which is amazing. I think you were actually, Danny, you were a big Disney fan at the time, right? Mm-hmm. And what was that like? Because you grew up in Florida, which was fairly liberal, and Disney's so PC, right? So, like, what was that like? Do you remember getting that call, your mom getting that call?
Disney was loved across the board in every, especially places like other big, like outside of the big cities, for sure. I think no matter where you grew up on Disney and Nickelodeon, you were like, didn't matter how PC it was.
Well, Florida's not so conservative, right? As a state, so like, not.
I think he's saying like, how did that divide feel like going into that, of being in a place that's so PC, where you're coming from a town that, like, us changing on the beach, being first of all, me almost getting fired because like people online were freaking out that I was wearing a bikini, right? And us being from Florida, we didn't even realize like why it might be weird for a 13-year-old, 14-year-old to be wearing a bikini. It just didn't, it didn't really click on why that is really, like, why that might be odd, or if it's odd or not. Like, it was just, for us, it was, completely a different, not understanding. I think in general, in LA, we didn't understand in Hollywood just how much more... Yeah.
You couldn't call, you couldn't have manners with a casting director and say, so like, yes, ma'am, or sir, anything like that. That was offensive.
Really?
I got completely such negative feedback, and one casting director was like, don't ever send her in there again because she's so fake with her yes, ma'am, please, sir. Like,
that was just the way you grew up.
And we're like, what?
So thank you, we're so young.
I know, it's weird, but it's also, that's what one thing we never really accounted for is, it's odd to even think that people in Hollywood think that a child could be fake or putting something on, whereas that just didn't occur to us. It's just a weird, it's odd, but that's just, that is how it is here, and everything seems to be, it's a plan. It's a PR stunt. They planned it out. They thought it out. And sometimes you're like, nah, man, nobody thought shit out.
You were just doing what came natural to you. That's all. But when your mom, by the way, got that call, and you're so young, you can't even really process how big Disney
and
is.
And Danny coached me for that audition because she had also just tested on Wizards of Waverly Place.
So you were the coach.
Yeah. She was the original Disney girl.
Because you went on to do Hannah Montana, which is pretty cool. What was that like?
It was awesome. I grew up watching Hannah Montana in Florida, so to come out here and be on it was super cool.
Did you work with Miley a bunch?
Absolutely. Once again, the shell shock thing, the difference between like adults and all of us, and everything just feels like a family, and you're just like, I don't even know these people, they're absolute strangers. It was awesome. It was so sick. Yeah, I loved it.
And fast forward, you do incredible projects. You did Big Love too, which we didn't speak about. But at a certain point, Danny, too, you got into EDM. I think you were like 17 or 18 when you first got into DJing,
when I went
right?
to my first rave.
Yeah. Do you remember your first concerts, both of you?
What was your first concert? My first concert was Kanye West and Jay-Z in Paris with their In Paris tour.
Huh. Actually in Paris?
In Paris.
In Paris. Paris in Paris.
Me and Zendaya were on a press tour in Paris, and we got tickets
that
and,
is so
and
fucking
we went.
Cool.
And it was so lit. It was when he had that big box and they like disappeared under that crazy box. Like, I don't know if anybody remembers that,
sort of,
he gets on this huge box and then all of a sudden he's gone and then Jay-Z appears one stage over on another huge box. And you're like, where are all these big boxes, man? it was lit.
Danny, what was yours?
First concert had to be the Bee Gees when I was growing up with my parents. So I have a forever
good concert,
love for
by
the
way.
Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, those voices, those harmonies.
Yeah, because I thought it was the Backstreet Boys.
I think that might have been. I might have been a little bit older. I don't know. My parents definitely took me to a Backstreet Boys and a Britney Spears concert when I was younger. I remember that.
But the Bee Gees are cooler, so we'll just go with
so
the Bee Gees.
So much cooler. Yeah. So much cooler.
And so you really had no experience DJing. You're 17 or 18. You had dabbled in fashion and things like that. And what kind of gave you the bug to get into this at that age?
When I was 17, I actually just went to my first rave because my friend, who is also a producer today, he invited me to a rave. It was hard summer, and I was like, all right, that sounds awesome. You know, being 17, I didn't smoke weed or do anything at the time, so I was just like, just sober in this crowd while everybody else is so fucked up around me, and I'm watching Crystal Castles. Mind-blowing performance.
Great
as
band.
She's like rocking off the freaking scaffolds.
Alice.
Incredible.
Yeah,
Alice,
she's
yeah.
Great, yeah.
Oh my god, mind-blowing. And then Major Lazer, and I just remember like looking around and feeling this buzz, and I was like, what is this feeling? That was the crowd energy, and I felt it for the first time, and I was just like, oh, this is magic. I feel like I'm on drugs, even though I didn't do anything. This is so cool. And that was the day that I absolutely fell in love with the community, man. And then I just started going to raves, and I think it was about 24, 25 when I actually picked up DJing, because I was like, what does that feel like up there? I need to know. I want
to
know.
Is it so weird to think about like Major Lazer and now like
what
you and Diplo have like love for each other? Like,
I never got into drugs at all. I just recently, like a year ago, probably dabbled in like mushrooms. I never ever did drugs, but I feel like if you do mushrooms, like a rave, that's kind of goes hand in hand. You probably the experience is probably like an enlightened experience if you do mushrooms.
Oh yeah, I mean for sure, mushrooms is this kind of like just vibey thing, so you get to feel. You get to feel art in a different way, just a little bit more intensified. I definitely don't like tripping balls. No, thank you. I'm good here on planet Earth.
Your DJ name is actually Comet, right?
It is.
So talk to me about how you got that nickname. So I think it was a friend of yours, and you're like, I love space. And
So actually, it was a total stranger. And so when I first started raving, part of the Plur community was a stranger could just give you a rave name. Didn't know anything about me, and he guessed Comet. And I was just like, how do you know me so well, bro? What the fuck? And so I'd always say, like, you know, I really love that. If I was ever a DJ, I would name myself Comet. And then...
With a three?
Later, because a three's, you know, was part of my spiritual journey, and it's just something that feels like the universe kind of just being like, what's up, kid? I'm like, I love you. 333, what's up? So I just incorporated that love into this.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And Belle, you think there'll be more music with you coming up?
When the time is right, yes. When the time is right for me, I think I've just fallen so deeply in love, like further and further with writing and directing, producing, creation, and I just wasn't. I don't know. I wasn't happy. When there was moments where I was happy when I was actually in the studio and things like that. Then the rest of it was kind of like, I don't know. I think that in years, in some time for sure, I will find the right team and the right version of me that wants to do this and what I want to say. I think part of me too was just working so much against the grind of this is what's formatted, this is what people want to hear, this is what radio stations will accept, and mm-hmm. my music is kind of like poetry based written, and that can be a little, it's just off the beaten path, and mm-hmm. it was amazing to watch Billie Eilish like go off the beaten path and create a whole fucking lane for so many other people to get into, because that was also believed from a lot of people not to be radio play and not to be hit, you know, this and that, because of it being so differently formatted.
Yeah, I guess if you talk about poets back in the day, Bob Dylan and artists like that, so there's a history of like poetry music for sure,
but it's just not here anymore. Yeah. Like, and when it is here, it's in these really niche places. Yeah. And it's like
Doechii does it kind of well.
Doechii's I loved it. Yeah,
she
does it so great. But yeah, I think it'll be a minute. I have a feeling that I'll probably end up doing some form of musical before it'll probably just launch me right back into singing. And I'll be like, I'm back, guys.
And I wish people could hear the music, though. I mean, the archive that you have sitting there. And while you probably wouldn't even release it anymore because it was a whole different person in a different age and a different time making the music, it's still so fucking good and so creative and so boppy even. Oh, man, I really do wish there was a way we could show it to people just on the download. Like, hey, lucky person, I'm going to send you a USB to release music.
Although you did get to perform at Carnegie Hall, even it was your book, which is an amazing highlight of your life. So talk to me about that, because that's incredible.
Yeah, thank you so much. Carnegie Hall was amazing. Yeah, definitely a big one to, you know, our dad talked a lot about Carnegie Hall and what that would, like, you know, even mean. And I just
the history in that building,
and to be there on a book that I, you know, went against the grain in all formats. I was told I'd never be able to act because I couldn't read and I didn't know how to write. I wrote a fucking book.
Of a wannabe mogul.
Yes, Mental Disarray, this edition, volume one. And crazy to also think I'm going against the grain in the way that just. It was told so many times, like, no, you need to write about this. It has to be autobiographical. It has to be this. It has to be that. It has to be all these different things. And you need a writing partner. You know, you need a ghostwriter. You need a ghostwriter. And I had written three other books with a ghostwriter before Life of a Wannabe Mogul growing up. And I felt like I loved that process for at that time and me not knowing how to write as much, but I really just wanted to do something of my own merit and of my own worth, fully me. And to be able to do that and then do it at Carnegie Hall was like,
crazy.
It's so crazy. And like, they were like, you're like the only person that's ever cursed in Carnegie Hall. And I cursed like 10 times in one long poem. That's so, and looking in the audience, right, you have to like imagine how everybody looks. They're in like the suits and ties and, you know, the bow ties and these fancy ball gowns. And I'm cursing at them about, like, you know, the love and disdain for myself or for my father, or for all these different things, right? And they are looking at me with this, like, I mean, the power in the room was so, the people crying and the people feeling complete and utter emotion to the fullest extent of the word, like being able to touch people and not understanding it myself. Like, you write and you're like, well, people relate, of course, because we're all seen in everybody else. We're all like each other, essentially. But then when you actually see people touching on these things that they're your personal trauma, but they're not yours anymore. Mm. They're ours. They're yours. You have your own personal trauma that attaches to this one, and now we're sharing it together, and it becomes this, like, orgasmic, beautiful, dark release of emotion. I don't even know. I can't do it justice. Words can't,
The story goes, by the way, that you wrote the book, and then I think maybe you left the USB or something on the plane, right? Because you wrote the book like before the book that actually came out, right?
Yes. I wrote two books, handwritten, and I left them on a Delta flight, and I know she's got them, because there was this
you say she, you mean the stewardess. The stewardess, yeah.
And she asked me for a photo for her niece, so I made like a little video for her niece, and I know she's got it.
She's been waiting to contact me.
She's like probably even DMing me, and she's like, "Girl, I've got this shit for you."
There's a lost and found. Did anybody contact?
Seriously, because she asked me too what I was working on. I was like, "Oh, this book that I'm writing. Oh, wow, this and that." And we keep talking about it. Man, it's got to be there. But meant to be. Clearly meant to be, because in that time as well, I was put on this. Well, you're supposed to turn in this draft, but now you just lost everything you had, but you still have this draft to make. You still have a deadline. So then rewriting the book completely in a completely different format, and doing it on the typewriter as well, like, very much a blessing in disguise. Don't know why I lost those books, but clearly there's a reason.
It worked out. Yeah. It's divine intervention. It's the universe.
And I'm working on the second one now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What is it about?
So the first one's called Mental Disarray, and the second one is called Mental Rehab. And essentially that should be what the book is about and how it should be formatted. The book, I didn't have an editor touch it. I wouldn't let them. The only thing I let them change is I spell to do together. I guess it sounds like
I think
like
I would do the same thing.
It's not to do. And she was like, my book producers, they were like, okay, Bella, can I just read this out? Can I just read this out before you get it? I just want to. So when he looked at it, it was like a really bad sentence, like a really dark, like I'm talking really dark sentence. And she reads it out, and in the middle of it is to dough. And it was just like, and she's like,
what was
you
the
see
sentence,
how that's
by the way,
not right? And in the book, to be honest, it's a sentence about molestation.
Oh,
and it
okay.
just, it's just such a fucking dark ass sentence, and to hear her say to do in it, she's like, you see how that kind of just, it takes away from what you're saying here. And I'm like, yep, damn it. I wanted to go, no edits, nothing. because I'm dyslexic too. So yeah. You see everything I spell wrong in the book. It's all there. You watch me re-spell it, rewrite it. Like, and I thought that that was also like a real, call to, you know, me being able to not do it. Yeah.
The book is more stream of consciousness in a way, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of just ideas that popped into your head versus the other one that was a bit more scripted, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is definitely stream of consciousness. The second one should also be in that same format. I'm still trying to figure out whether I'm going to do it on a typewriter or not, or if I'm going to pick a different format for this book. But it should be me trying to get my shit together.
Yeah. Talking about fast forward a little bit to life moments, we were just talking about Carnegie Hall, Danny. Ultra, was that? Would you say that's one of your highlights of your life? It has to be, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So when you're on stage like that and you're performing in front of that many people, talk to me about that and that experience for you.
Yeah, I mean, performing in front of a large thing of people, it's just something that I thought was going to be a lot scarier. Than it actually is. There's just something about connecting through music with all of those people. You're all in the same vibe. Nobody else is like distracted by anything else. You're just there. You're all like a wave. Oh, yeah. There's just something that it's
pretty powerful, right?
It's very powerful.
Definitely. It's incredible. So talk me about some other things you're working on too. Let's talk about your jewelry line, Thorn, right? So there's so many creative endeavors you have going on, but that's something that's very personal to you, right?
Yeah. I'm really excited. I'm really happy to be able to make a product that finally something I can fully be really, really proud of. You know, I think as an artist, we go through this a lot where we, you know, kind of want to make things and we partner with different companies. And then, like, if something gets messed up, a fan doesn't get their order, or it's not the right size, or it's this or that. And you're just all the time, I think, like, I've just personally in the past been really, like, upset by things not being taken care of, and also it not being something that I can go in the shipping room myself and package this up and send it out. And it's, to be able to work with one, a company that takes 100% serious pride in not only the jewelry, but in my name and the standard that I am giving people. This is no matter what it has to reach. Okay. And that standard by a lot of other companies, they don't want to partner with that standard because it's too hard. You've got a lot of people working under you and people messing up, and you just can't promise that something's not going to break when it comes in the mail or not going to do this. And out of every single order on Thorn, I just saw this email, so I'm very excited about all these updates. We've only had 3 returns.
Amazing.
Isn't that crazy? Yes. 3 returns, which is either sizing or a bracelet not fitting. You know, it's jewelry, so yeah. it's very specific. But that made me just really so happy. We ship it out in a day to 2 days. Like, this just isn't crazy. You know, it makes me so, so happy that I'm working with a company that really upholds the standard that I keep saying for my companies that we, you know, have to live by. So, yeah, very excited about that.
That's awesome.
And
was there something missing, by the way, in the jewelry world where you wanted to create your own line? Because ultimately it's always like a need for something. Is this one of your necklaces, by the way, that you're wearing?
No, actually, we are designing some heart lockets.
Okay.
But I just got this made
cool.
for me and my mom. It's got a photo of us in here.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I can unclip it. Beep.
Oh, so yep. beautiful, so cute.
And then I've got me and my dad right here in my hearts. I've got hearts all over my body.
Yeah.
But
so you're
yes.
working on those designs too.
Yes, yeah, as well. We've done a big heart collection, and I've been telling them I really want to make some like more pendant. The style is definitely like vintage mixed with rock. You know, it's got a lot of masculine energy to it while also being 1930s vintage,
yeah.
beautiful, like, you know, very much antique feeling. Yeah,
I love it. Well, let's fast forward to the podcast, because we've just talked about it a little bit. You're so real on the show, and that's one of the things I love about it. And again, the chemistry that you both have is amazing. Talk to me about, like, just, you know, how it is that you're doing this. Is anything off limits on the show, or nothing's off limits?
A little bit, technically. Like, we have a lot of memories and friends and people that we don't really want to, I don't know, get to, like, those are their details. We're not sharing those experiences. Those are private. Do share some that are totally, totally okay, that we both have
the same
level
yeah.
and understanding of, like, oh my God, I can't believe someone went there. That is too far. We don't like talking shit, for sure. It's really hard for us to talk shit. We always try to find a positive and negative of the week. And then the negative, we're like, what is biting my gonads this week? But yeah, everything else, though, we really open, especially about ourselves, very, very open to some pretty funny memories that we shouldn't have said. But
yeah.
How has your dynamic changed as sisters over the years? I'm sure your relationship has changed. Did you still live together? You still live together, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We live together.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that your dynamic has changed at all over the years?
Maybe. I don't know. You mean because we've both become boss bitches?
Yeah.
You went with bitches. Yeah, but I was thinking bitches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, would say so, maybe.
Maybe.
I think we both, like, also, like, know what we're really good at in the house, like, when it comes to living together. Like, Danny knows that I'm notoriously going to leave my food downstairs or, like, just leave my things on the kitchen counter. Like, you know, I don't think I know anything notoriously that you're going to do, maybe besides steal, like, peanut butter cups out of my secret, my
fall asleep
my
during the movie
cabinet.
That we can wait to watch forever.
I feel like I'm on the podcast right now.
Yeah,
Twisted Sisters.
Yeah, which is funny because we've been trying to find, when we came up with the name Twisted Sisters, it was just funny because it's really the exact, like, opposite, though, really, of what I think, like, people are like, oh yeah, they're twisted and they're fucking like, yeah, they need to talk some shit and, like, go in, like, and it's like, well, I would like to tap
into that side.
By the way, it's also the name of the band. It's also an 80s band, too, Twisted Sister.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, we already went through copyright situations with that.
Is there a topic that you want to tackle soon that you haven't, like mental health? I mean, I said, I love the dating app one, because even the whole idea about people sliding into your DMs, you were talking about the fact that, like, if I'm talking to you on an app, don't hit me up on Instagram.
Yeah, it's super weird.
Right?
Yeah, it is somehow an invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
Well, on the show, yeah, we do touch on everything. We've had some fun with the dating stuff. We have talked about mental health, confidence, our own experiences of growing up in the industry, but we've also been having some fun with having guests on, which it just brings a whole new energy to our dynamic, which is fun.
Might there be a Snoop Dogg episode?
Oh,
at some point?
My God, yes.
There could be.
There will be a Snoop Dogg episode. And he will smoke out everyone. All the producers are going
to
have to leave.
It'll just
be like
so thick.
Yes. Literally.
Bella, I feel like you have like a great Snoop Dogg story. There's got to be a great story involved. Is there one in particular that you can recall?
One of my favorite stories. So Snoop brings his like bus thing everywhere. It's awesome. It's
his caravan.
It's very comfortable in there.
And it's totally decked out head to toe, fucking Pimp My Ride style. Yeah. I used to love that show. They need to bring it back.
Bring it back. You can bring it back.
Fucking Pimp My Ride. I don't even know how to drive, but I'm going to pimp it.
True.
Let's go.
All right, so he has his caravan.
Yes. And for some reason, we don't roll any of the windows down, so it is a full hot box.
No, there wasn't. You
no,
couldn't.
There wasn't. There
you
was
couldn't
no
roll the window
down.
Down.
Right, it's one of those.
Yeah, it's just
you
all
can't,
up.
Right.
So Bella always rolls what she smokes.
Yeah.
Snoop also rolls what he smokes. You'd think there would just be an extra person
there.
But
he smokes mine, too.
Yeah,
because you have your
own
cannabis line too,
And I smoke his, but like he doesn't know that's like that really
that means
is like
a lot.
That's he's smoking my joint. Like, he's like, of course you're smoking my joint. Yeah. Like, come on out.
Yeah,
I'm Snoop Dogg, but in my mind, I'm thinking like you don't know how much I really refuse to smoke anybody else's.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she doesn't smoke anybody else's.
And Charlie got so high, poor Charlie.
Yeah, poor Charlie.
At one point, he had Snoop's glass rolled blunt. Two joints that I had rolled, like two spliffs, and then he had maybe a cigarette or something, like he had one between every hand, and there's these photos of Charlie just like, we're just saying it was too much smoke in the car. Long story short, there was too much smoke in the caravan. It was brain cells died.
But when Snoop wants
heavily.
To smoke, you can't say no, by the way, when he wants to share a smoke.
We don't
want to
say no.
Yeah.
Why would you say no to Snoop Dogg?
We're like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah.
Then we went to IHOP.
Amazing.
It was lit.
It was lit.
No, it was so lit.
So I anticipate him coming on your show, I'm sure sometime soon.
Yeah. Well, we should put. I can't believe we didn't put him on the list.
Yeah,
what are
we
doing, Danny?
Well, you had the Culpo. I think the Culpo sisters
are coming up. Yes,
out, which is great.
Yeah, which we're excited about. We're doing like a sleepover episode.
Yeah,
it'd
be fun.
Which would be cute.
By the way, by the time this episode airs, Coachella would have already passed because Coachella is actually like next week. But you're also doing your own party, Coachella.
No.
Oh, you're not. You were
not
doing your
year.
Own. Okay. Okay. Yeah. You were. Okay. All right. Okay. You were doing.
I've had insane parties in the past, though. Throws an annual one every year, and I mean, just
are you going to Coachella?
Biggest artist have played it. It's so cool.
Yeah,
we'll be going.
We'll still be able to attend a day or two, cool. But yeah, with scheduling this year, it's just it's gonna be the first year to fuck up my annual shit.
Yeah,
and I'm really upset about that. So it's actually kind of like a really sore subject that you're bringing up.
Oh, okay. I'm more into Power Trip, by the way. Did you see the
so
Power
just,
Trip?
Like, hurt.
Have you seen the Power Trip lineup? Uh-huh. That's more my. It's like AC/DC, cool. Guns N' Roses, Ozzy. It's like this like rock.
At
it's
Coachella?
It's at Coachella.
No,
it's at the Coachella Fairgrounds in like October. But it's like it's basically like the rock Coachella. So I'm actually very excited.
Well,
that
sounds actually way awesome.
I mean, I'm actually way more. I'm not.
That's yeah, that has me stoked. Yeah. I thought you were saying this is like at a tent at Coachella.
No,
I'm like, Danny, we're at that tent.
I'm voting for your party this year at Power Trip, which is the Rock Coachella in October. So maybe that could be something that's happening.
Get all the sponsors lined up
exactly.
again. Let's go. We got a new one.
But Danny, you're actually leaving around Coachella to go do a festival, I think.
That's
right?
True.
Yeah.
I'm playing in
Hawaii, Honolulu. I'm so excited.
Awesome.
That's
talking
my
about
kind of
that.
Vacation.
Because you just released two tracks, by the way.
I did. Take and me to I a have rave. Another one coming out next week. Awesome. As we leave to Coachella. Yep.
Take so me Space to Cakes, Take Me to a Rave.
Yep. And Warp Speed up next. Yay. No, April 14th.
That's exciting. Deanie, can you give a shout out to the tattoo, though?
Space Cakes. So for the music video, I got my booty tatted with UV ink.
Amazing.
So it glows,
so does that
in, it glows in the yeah. dark. Oh, okay. It's yeah. awesome. It's a freaking awesome. Neon.
I didn't know that people did that, by the way.
I know.
It's
I
a thing.
I fill my whole body with it. So when I'm DJing, you can just see it everywhere.
That's awesome. So you're playing this festival. Who else is on the festival with you?
Oh, man. So many huge. So it's a dubstep festival. Riot 10 is throwing it. It's called Hyper Die Fest. Rusko. Shit, there was a bunch of people. I'm playing it. What's up? I'm coming. It's going to be really fun.
Is there anything both of you have not conquered yet? Belle, you have so many projects. We're talking about your directorial debut, cannabis line, jewelry line, book, music. Anything you haven't done yet that you really want to do? You heard it here first, by the way.
Lingerie.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the next one.
You'd be great.
I become friends with this amazing designer who used to design for La Perla for lots and lots of years, and I'm sure I will build my company with him, because that's like one of the main kind of like styles that I really love, that kind of classic vintage vibe meets florals. And yeah, I've been approached by a few companies, but I just, with lingerie, like, these things are against your private parts.
Yeah, of course.
You cannot be just rocking some kind of, you know what I mean? They tell you it's this material, and then it's polyester meets this and meets that, and it's rubbing itchy, all over yeah. your vag, and you're getting a yeast infection now. Nobody wants that! I can't do this! So, yeah, it'll definitely be, again, like, yeah, in a few years, finding the right partner to come in and really take that chance to spend more money, even though you all don't want to, but we gotta do it to make sure the product is actually really worthy. But yeah, that'll probably be another venture.
Part of the Thorn Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Danny, I love this quote, actually. You said the best and the hardest things happen to you yet. So talk to me about what are the best things that haven't come to you yet, because there's so much more on the horizon. We just started working together, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good stuff that's coming up, good. I hope. Yeah. So talk to me about the best things that haven't happened yet for you.
Oh, the best things that haven't happened to me yet. I love it because it's mysterious, and I don't even know what that is. I mean, if at so many points in my life, if I would have been able to go back in time and say from who I am today, what I'm doing, I would have had no idea that that's where I would be. So there's definitely so many things I want to touch on. I also have a vegan food line. I would love to expand into that eventually in my free time. But music, it's going to take me so many interesting places, even outside of just making music and creation. I definitely would love to get more involved in making the scene just a safer, better place, not just for, you know, the crowds, but also for the planet. It can be quite wasteful. Mm. So I would like to have some sort of impact on the industry, just even outside of creating a cool song.
Like an eco-friendly festival or something.
Yeah, definitely. And involving more vegan food for the vegans. We're out there. We're walking 12 miles a day. We need nourishment.
Oh, there's got to be a vegan DJ festival. No, there isn't one?
No.
Oh, that
could
be.
Probably in Bali or
somewhere.
That
sure.
is such a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people would go to the all-vegan festival.
No, but if you allowed other people that aren't vegan to go, but it was, like, you know, really rooted in a all-healthy
vegan you're not allowed.
Festival, and then maybe you got, like, special, like, you know, half percentages on things if you were actually vegan. You know, you, like, reward vegans for being vegan.
Well, if there's not one, we can start one soon. But do you ever work on music together, by the way? Not really.
We have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that yet to come? Is that going to, at some point, we'll see the light of day?
Yeah. What I love about me and Danny in the studio is that as writers, we both like to use different things, different words, different expressions, just super different, and not going for well, this song is about falling in love. How do we say we fall in love? Like, Danny and I just go in such a different form of how to say, how to fall in love. Trying to find, like, the oddest expression to show that, showcase that. And that's what I also love about writing with Danny in the studio, is that when I'm not in the studio with Danny, I always have to try and explain, like, ah, oh, that's good, but what is something, like, more different than the word? It's just used a lot. I don't want to hear it. Like, we want to find, like, a new way. I think one of the beautiful parts about 80s music is that people couldn't just say, fucking and rubbing and fucking, you know. It was finding a really interesting way to say the same dirty, fun, scandalous things, but yeah, finding a different way to say it. And I feel like that's just completely gone down the drain now. It's just straight, like, dick in the ass. Yeah. Dick in the ass. And you're like, oh,
nothing
you
is know, left out
what
of
else can we say besides dick in the ass? How are we feeling?
Do you have a favorite 80s song, by the way, either one of you?
My Kind of Lover, Billy Swear.
Great song, by the way. He just put out a new song after like 20 years. I wanted to love it. I love Billy Squier, but anyway, great artist. What about you?
I'm gonna look it up. Original yeah. Crimson Clover.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I just want to know, like,
what about the Joan Jett version?
No, of course, that's super fire.
Great
but
song,
she's
yeah.
so hot and stuff.
Yeah, she's
it's
great.
So cool to hear the, even without, like, how I know to make music, with DAWs and fucking synths and all of this, just this, it's a little bit easier now to create these effects. And I hear Crimson and Clover, her songs like that, and I'm like, how did you do that back in the day? I wish I was in the room watching this magic
yeah.
happen. Like, how were you doing that with the analog? That fascinates me. So
I do like the yeah. Joan Jett version, by the way. It's great. It's great.
Fuck yeah.
And finally, we do these top five lists. They're always a lot of fun. So I'm going to ask you a question. I'd love you both to answer your favorite. The top five best underrated DJs out there.
Oh, I have no idea. You're going to have to go all Danny on this one. I have.
Hi.
I'm so bad with the. Just really bad.
With the ricker.
So, Danny, let me ask you your top five best underrated DJs
yeah.
out there.
So, this is my opinion, right? All right. My top five underrated. Crank That. Fire.
By the way,
Fire.
Bella, you could interject with one you like.
You
that's
could.
Maybe not so commercial.
Because
a lot of people discover people through these lists. So, it could just be someone that you like that's, you know. Well, we'll let you, Danny. Let's put Danny on that list.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's,
no, yeah.
All right. Crank That. Insane Sets. Lots of energy. I love him. Afterthought. Eliminate. Tynan. Oh, actually, this one's gonna surprise you guys. Lil Jon. Lil Jon is an amazing DJ, and not only did we have so much fun at his set when we were like, "Wait, Lil Jon's playing?" He was there.
He came on to ours. After.
Yeah, that's true. At Live. Yeah, he did come onto our stage. That was cool and did a little.
Mm-hmm.
That was the number one cool. most underrated DJ.
Comment.
Yo,
whoa. That's a comment.
Thank you. I didn't know you were going to say that.
And talking about DJs, too, one other thing I wanted to touch base on. We were talking about just before, if we had to name what you all think the top five highest paid DJs in the world. This list might surprise you.
I
Alesso.
No. I'm wow. All right. Okay.
Let's see. Let's go for number one.
I knew one.
The top five highest paid DJs
I'm
in
really
the world.
Trying for you, Dan.
Number
okay.
one, what do you think?
David Guetta.
He is on that list. He's number four.
What?
Okay.
Oh, we're
we got four more to go.
We're
what
so
do you think?
If that's number four. Tiesto?
Tiesto's on that list.
Nice.
Number three.
Is Alesso not on the list?
Who's that?
Alesso?
He is not on the list.
Damn it!
But we got two out
know,
of the five.
I know about him, and that's really cool, Bella.
But we got three more to go.
You see how supportive she is, guys?
We got one, two,
even,
and
okay,
five
okay,
left.
Okay.
One, two, and five.
Cascade.
Not on the list.
Wow. Surprise. Marshmallow?
Not on the list.
Skrillex?
Not on the list.
What?
Should
yes,
I tell you who
you
they
have
are?
To tell me.
Number one, Calvin Harris. Oh,
really?
That
yeah, I
that
feel like I should have thought
off
of that
in the
one.
Studio forever and then
that
pops
one's
out.
So
is
in America
face?
Everywhere, like
love
a household name.
He's just
everywhere.
Always gardening too.
And number two, by the
he's
way,
he's always gardening.
He's always gardening.
That makes yeah. me like him a lot.
I know.
Plus, he's like tall and like you know what I mean. He's like good looking, and so it just like helps a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps.
Number two, I got to be honest, I didn't even know who this was until number two is Gianluca Vacchi, the Italian DJ and like social media personality. No, I didn't. I looked. He's the guy, like the Italian guy with gray hair. He's 22 million followers.
What?
Does that ring a bell? I don't know.
No.
Apparently 200 million. I don't know if that's 200 million a year, I guess. Maybe that's what he makes. Crazy, right? Yeah, I don't know. Number five, Steve Aoki, our friend.
Yes, why didn't we think of that?
My friend, my extended family for years. Yeah, I love Steve Aoki.
He also plays like all year round.
Yeah. No, like every day of his life. I know. He plays it's incredible.
120 million.
And how many cakes can you smash? It's crazy.
A lot of cakes.
Wow. I wonder if he ever tries to like fuck up those cakes a little bit. You know, just to like see if like it comes out different. He does it so many times.
I love Steve, by the way. He's
he is. He's like, I'll make this one frozen cake. Oh my god!
Next time we meet, we're gonna have comment on that list, right? Next time we do this podcast,
let's
part
go.
Two of the show. Anything else we need to plug? Well, the show Amped. It's on Amped, Twisted Sisters, Wednesdays, 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. live.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. It's fucking live, man.
It's fucking live. Yep.
It's crazy.
And
you
the next show, this will drop in May, so we don't know who the next shows are, but that'll.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. Well, you'll have new, so you'll have more songs dropping by then, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
More music?
I think the full EP is going to be released by May.
Awesome.
In May. Yay.
I love it. Exciting. And Bella, any other projects before we go?
I have some things happening at festivals coming up. I'm not sure that I can like announce them yet.
We love an exclusive. Here.
Looking for my publicist. I'll bring that back. But yeah, Divinity premiered at Sundance, and will be some other fun places as well.
Amazing.
And The Trainer, St. Clair. There's another one I'm missing. I'm just gonna do a little cut edit. You know, note over and this other movie that you did, Bella. Don't forget.
Josh traveling all over this year to film more.
To film more. I feel like that's what's really gotten me. Like, I want
to
say the names that I'm, like,
about
doing. Yeah, and I'm just like, no, Bella. Like, you know, not yet. And do the ones that are coming out because that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're both very inspiring and major bosses. So I'm so happy to have you here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we'll see you again soon. Thank you, guys.
This is so fun.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
And now a word from our new friend of the show. Fellas, do you feel like you might want to spice things up in the bedroom? Blue Chew tablets, just for fun, will bring that added spice and fun back into your bedroom. What's a Blue Chew tablet, you say? It's a chewable tablet with the same active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis. The difference is it costs just a fraction, it's delicious, and you don't have to deal with going to the doctors and having that awkward conversation with them. It's as easy as going online, speaking to a medical provider, and they send them your way. Use my code for a free month supply. Go to bluechew.com, use LIPS, and you pay only $5 for shipping. Do yourself a favor and bring back the fun into your bedroom. And now back to the show.
You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Well, that was fun. Bella and Danny Thorne, sisters. Check out their show on Amped, Twisted Sisters. Check out all their projects, Danny's music, Bella's films, everything. There's so much to catch up on with these two. They're quite busy. And they are unstoppable. As I mentioned, if you like the show, please make sure to tell a few folks about the show and give it 5 stars if you can on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere that you get your podcast. And also, please make sure to follow us at Scott Lips on Instagram and all forms of social media and at Lip Service Pod. Theme music by Robbie Hoppin. Thank you, my friends, and see you real soon.